lives transformed by the power of God just never gets old. And I don't know what your story is, and in this group, there's hundreds of different stories represented here. But what we have in common today is that we gather to come to the God who has the power to change us, no matter where we've been, no matter what we've done, no matter what we've become. There's a God who says, come to me, and he can change us for the better. And thank you for joining us on this beautiful day here. We're so glad to have you. And this is a part of just what we do as Washington Heights, and we like to get everybody together when the Utah weather allows us to do that, so that we can just celebrate together who God is and the difference that he's making. If you came prepared to give today, we have one way for you to do that, and that is an electronic way. And you will see that listed here, and if you go to our church's website, you will be able to do that as we do on a normal basis. But we don't have our boxes set up out here, but we are glad that you are with us today. And if you were here yesterday, you know that there was also a great event. There was a 5K that took place, and it was in conjunction with an organization called Love Justice, and they are doing great things around the world to rescue people out of human trafficking and just end that plague that has become so prevalent in our day. And if you want to find out more about that, we would direct you to the Love Justice website. There are a lot of different ways to get involved, but you being a part of that yesterday will make a difference in the lives of people, so thank you for caring about a much bigger picture than we often see right here. Not too long ago, we also had a great event go on around here, and it was a Bible adventure camp where we had kids show up, and many of you helped to make that happen. Wanted to show you a little bit of what happened on that day, so check out this video. So that's our series that we're in right now entitled Positively Different. And we're going to look at that message in just a moment. I want to let you know in a little while at the end of our, after the message, toward the end of our service, we're also going to have some people that are going to go public in something called believer's baptism. People that put hope and trust in Jesus. And maybe you didn't think about that before today, but you think, you know what? I think God is calling me to do that, to make a public statement about my faith and trust in Him. That opportunity is going to be there for you. We've got clothes to get changed into, but we'll talk about that when the time comes. So let's talk about being positively different in a day like this. Faith in the God of the Bible, the Jesus of the Bible, has always been lived out in culture that exists in this world. But would you agree with me that the last, I don't know, 18 months or 2 years has brought some disruption that has made that maybe more tricky than it's ever been, at least in our lifetime. And there are people that are angry, and there are people that are yelling and ranting and raging on Facebook and all forms of social media and interpersonally. And we may wonder, what are we to do in response to that? How do you honor God, love God, and respond in a day like ours? And I want to begin with a story. It's a true story. It actually comes out of a book that is entitled Christians in the Age of Outrage, that is written by a guy named Ed Stetzer. And he tells us about, you know, what our culture looks like. Our world seems awash in anger, division, and hostility. Outrage is all around. We are living in a day, and indeed our moment, our cultural moment, when we need to live like Christ in the midst of the shouting, anger, and hatred. And I think we'd probably agree to that, but I got to tell you, I've just found that there are a lot of people who love God that might be a part of the shouting and the anger and the hatred. And we might say, well, what option is there? What else, you know, can we do? So here's an example that Ed Stetzer mentions in his book. But there was a man named Caleb Kaltenbach, and he was in Costco one day, and he was over in the book section, and he saw a stack of Bibles, and they were found in the fiction section. And so he took a picture of that, and he posted on his tweet, Costco has Bibles for sale under the genre of fiction. And do you know what the reaction was to that? People were outraged. This is a slap in the face of people of faith. How dare Costco, and of course, the ultimate diss, right? Boycott Costco. And the owner of Costco happens to be a devout Catholic. He issued an apology and said it was a mistake. In fact, Caleb Kaltenbach actually says, I believe Costco when they said it was an error. Hopefully God uses this topic to spark conversations of faith in His Word. I'm sure He will. The person who initially posted that is saying, look, I thought it was funny. And I thought it was kind of interesting. I certainly didn't think it was some big plot that was Costco was carrying out to remove faith, you know, from the presence of our land. But that is the way that it was taken. And this is what Ed Stetzer goes on to say as a result of that. The Christian outrage machine had become a runaway train again. And now we might say, well, what other way is there to respond in a day like this? When people are coming at you, what do you do? How do you respond? What we're going to see is that in contrast to the outrage of our day, one of the characteristics about Jesus is that He could not be provoked. And before we think, well, maybe that was just, you know, His personality character, but the rest of us, you know, that's just who we are and what we're like. It was actually central to the message that He taught to those who would follow Him, put their hope and trust in Him, and seek to live for Him regardless of the day in which they lived. Now, I don't know about you, but when people come at me, my natural instinct is to react. You know, years ago, many years ago, I played soccer. And in that game, you know, if somebody pushes you, you know what I would do? I'd push them back. And if somebody's going to get a little chippy, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to be chippy back. And I'm going to be more chippy than they were to me. In fact, one time the coach says, one thing I know about you is that if somebody pushes you, you're going to push them back harder. Now, again, I don't know about you. That is just my natural instinct. I love a good debate. I love to enter into an argument and discuss, you know, various issues. But you look at the life of Jesus, and the way that he responded was positively different. And it's a difference that was not just something that we can see in his life and say, well, isn't that great for him? But look at the day that we live in, and look at the time in which we find ourselves. It's something that he actually gave us direction about. A central message that was a part of following after him. Here's what one of his disciples who spent 3 years with Jesus said about him. Peter, in one of his letters, said, to this you were called because Christ suffered for you, leaving you an example. Well, what's the example? That you should follow in his steps. When they hurled their insults at him, he did not retaliate. When he suffered, he made no threats. Instead, he entrusted himself to the one who judges justly. That's what Peter saw in Jesus' life and says it's an example for us to what? To follow. Not just to admire, not just to respect, but to actually follow. And so what I want to look at today is how is it that we can respond like Jesus? And there are some choices, and they are going to be counter-cultural choices to our cultural moment that follow in the footsteps of Jesus. They're taken from the Gospel of Luke, and in Luke chapter 6, I want to show something here at the beginning of this before we get into what Jesus actually says about responding. In these days, he went out to the mountain to pray, and all night he continued in prayer to God. He goes up on the mountain to commune with God, and when the day came, he called his disciples and he chose them from among the 12 and he named them his apostles. And he came down with them and stood on a level place and he lifted up his eyes and said to his disciples, and he begins to teach. But if you're familiar at all with the Bible, can you think of another time that somebody went up on a mountaintop to commune with God and then came down and had something to share with the people who were there? And if you know anything about the story of the Bible, there is one guy who had a similar experience. His name is Moses. And he goes on the top of a mountain, and what does he come down with? The Ten Commandments. And the Ten Commandments sometimes have been turned into a ladder that we can climb in order to get right with God, but that's not why it was given. God delivered his people and created this new community, this new nation called Israel. And he did it for a purpose. He did it for a reason. Not because he just loved them as opposed to all the other nations, but he wanted to establish himself in the center of a nation, including these commandments, which were ways to engage in community with each other. And they stood in such counter-cultural ways to that ancient world. The goal was to be different in some good and right ways. And so that's so that they could be a light to all the nations that were around them because God wanted all people to come and know and understand who he is. And so he gives those commandments. And here is Jesus in a similar kind of way coming down from the mountain after communing with God. And now he's going to communicate about this new community. It's called the church. That he came to begin. How do we engage with each other, with the world around us? And so Jesus begins to teach. And here's what it says. Blessed are you when people hate you, when they exclude you, when they revile you. What is revile? That's maybe being insulted. And when they spurn you, when they reject you, your name is evil, on account of the Son of Man. And Jesus, you know, what are you talking about? Because those are the exact kind of ways in which people, you know, can often respond in this day and the way that they can often come across. And why is it that you could be so extremely in the other direction compared to the way that things often go? Countercultural choices to respond like Jesus. Here's the first one. We saw some words about this already. Choose mercy over anger. And boy, it is so easy to choose and respond with anger. And Jesus, why would you put that at the heart and soul of what you're calling and inviting your followers to do, to respond? Here's how he goes on and what he teaches. He says, but I say to you, when you hear, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who abuse you, To the one who strikes you on the cheek, offer the other also. And when you read that, again, is that your natural reaction? And I'll just be upfront, I'll be honest with you, it's not mine. And maybe, you know, you've heard that whole idea of turn the other cheek, and maybe you interpret that like I often did, that just means that you got to lay down and be a doormat for people. But that is not what Jesus is doing. He's not giving us a checklist of, okay, if somebody does this, here's what you do. And if somebody, you know, says these things, here's how, you need to say in response. He's trying to give us principles of responses that are so positively different than what is often experienced, that it stands out in a way that points to the God who is unlike anything this world has to offer. The whole idea of turning the other cheek, you know, that is a cultural thing from Jesus' culture 2,000 years ago. And kissing on the cheek and having that sort of embrace was a sign of friendship, right? They say, you know, even today, all cultures have a preferred spacing. You know, some cultures, you know, tend to be closer. Some cultures tend to be a little bit more far apart. I come from the people, the Germanic people, their preferred spacing is one person per room. You know, let's just keep it spread out and not get too close. But I've seen some of this on a trip with the church to the country of Peru. The way that people greeted each other in the church is that they would give a kiss on the cheek. And so the first time I walked up to the door, being a Germanic person, and all of a sudden somebody just kissed me on the cheek. And that was a little bit unusual to me from where I come from. And, you know, then it just became customary that every day that's what we did. But I wasn't quite sure about which cheek it was and which way you're supposed to go. And so I gave a couple people a headbutt of friendship down in Peru because I didn't quite measure up there and still have some learning to do. But do you understand where Jesus is going with this? Do you smell what we're stepping in here based on what Jesus is telling us? That's for somebody who is opposed to you and ranting and raging, make them your friend. This isn't about being a doormat. This is responding in ways that will have a positive impact, that we do not respond in kind, but instead we respond in ways that are positively different, and even you would turn the other cheek as an offer of friendship. Despite what they've said, despite what they've done. Now, this does not mean that we don't ever say anything about, you know, things that are evil and things that are wrong. This doesn't mean that we never have an opinion about anything. But in the moments when we have an opportunity to respond in kind, Jesus is calling us to a different kind of response, and one that would even seek to have that person ultimately become our friend. Jesus gives a couple more examples, and again, these are principles, and he says, and from the one who takes away your cloak and not withholding your tunic either. And give to everyone who begs from you and from one who takes away your goods and do not demand them back. And as you wish that others would do to you, do so to them. Jesus says those words in a culture where the Romans were large and in charge, and a Roman soldier could demand to take whatever he wanted from a citizen of Israel, and they had to give it. And so Jesus is not talking about hypotheticals here. He's talking about something that people could encounter. And again, the idea is not to give a checklist of things. Well, yep, did that, they said that, then I said this. These are principles that respond in a positively different kind of way. A little more about the context of Jesus' day. Romans were in charge, talked about that. The most taxed people in history, if you think we got some tax issues, you ain't seen nothing yet, was upwards of 50 to 70% was taxed. Soldiers could take anything they wanted. There was Roman violence. They could just mistreat people any way they wanted to. There were anti-Roman movements, the Zealots. These were the people in the day of Jesus who said, we got to restore Israel. We got to kick these Romans out, and we need to restore what we have been created to be and to do. And you know what that led to? It led to cycles of rebellion and retribution. And let me give you one example of that, lest we think that we're just talking in theory. A little bit of a map from Jesus' day. Jerusalem, way down here. Nazareth is a town that Jesus grew up in. And you see there's a pretty good distance between Jerusalem and Nazareth. But Nazareth is just 3 miles from a town called Sepphoris, beautiful town. And there was somebody when Jesus was just growing up as a boy, his name was Judas, and he got some people together. They raided the city of Sepphoris. They raided their weapons, and they took the money, and they funded a revolution against the Romans. We're going to kick them out. And you know what the Romans did in response? They defeated Judas and his people. They burned the city to the ground, and they sold all the inhabitants into slavery. And maybe even Jesus is thinking about that story that was a real story from the days of his youth. But that's how the world often functions, right? That somebody responds and somebody pushes us and we push them back harder. And Jesus calls his followers to do something that is positively different. How do things change? Change happens when hearts change. Change happens one life at a time. Change happens when God transforms us, not when we rant and rage and cause a rebellion in response to all that we think has been done wrong. God changes things when he changes the heart. And Jesus takes us in the direction, well, that's great. Okay, how does that happen? It happens when we respond in positively different ways. But that's not the reputation of followers of Jesus for the most part in our day. And I find that very unfortunate. You know, I volunteer as a chaplain in Layton City for the fire department, and as I talk to people there, they talk about angry Christians, and it makes me sad. Because that makes an impact as well. And Jesus tells us, yeah, you can make an impact in a lot of different ways. He's taken us in a direction that makes an impact for the better. What would it be like if the reaction of our culture, even if it, you know, stayed the way it was. What if it sounded something like this? Those followers of Jesus, no matter what we throw at them, they always respond with such grace and kindness. Look at how they serve even those who dismiss their faith. That would make a difference. That would make an impact for the better. And as I understand what happened in the early years of what Jesus came to begin called the church, in the first 300 years of the church's existence, it was illegal to be a follower of Jesus. But many came. Why? In a culture steeped in paganism back in those days, there were people who actually took Jesus up on his words here and elsewhere. And they tried to make real the things that he said. And so babies were abandoned and they said, we'll take them. You don't want them, you just want to leave them to exposure, which people could do. They said, we'll take them and we'll raise them. Where did that come from? There was somebody who said, let the little children come. And in a culture where kids were not valued one bit, there were people who said, we value them because he valued them. And the value that we have on children today is great. You know what? It didn't fall out of a clear blue sky. It came from somewhere, and it came from none other than Jesus himself. And at a time when it was real easy, you know, for people to just be excluded because of their faith in Jesus from a culture that said, you got to honor and worship Caesar above all else. And they said, no, we're going to honor and worship Jesus. And it cost them. It cost them in the business world. It cost them in the relational world. It cost them in many ways. And they said, well, that's okay. That's the direction we've been called. And is it any wonder that a culture that thought, man, you guys believe some crazy things, that this guy died and rose again from the dead, that he was God in the flesh. But what you do and how you live is positively different. And many came. The response that we have in days like this can have a tremendous impact in the world in which we live. Let me give you one example again of how I think this maybe doesn't flow out in a great way. There was a time in 2015 when Starbucks Christmas cups were placed out, and there was a follower of Jesus who tweeted out something that was retweeted over 14 million times. Here's what he said. He said, Starbucks removed Christmas from their cups because they hate Jesus. I don't know. Sounds a little weird to me. I don't know that Starbucks, you know, ever, you know, made any claims about that. And in fact, nothing was ever removed from the cups. In fact, you go back in the history of what they have done and you look at the different cups and they all have a Christmas theme, but they never said it. So nothing was removed. 14 million retweets and anger. Let me give you a contrast here. I don't know if you're familiar with this young lady. Her name is Sarah Silverman, and she's a comedian and an actress, and I'm not real familiar with her at all, but I heard about something that she did, a way that she reacted. Now realize, we're not talking about, you know, who's in a relationship with God here. We're talking about the kind of reaction that has an influence for the better. But she was attacked on her social media platform in just some rude and mean ways. I mean, profanity-laced, misogynistic, anti-Semitic. Somebody just went off on her. And her followers came to her defense, and they were pushing back on that person. And then Sarah Silverman, who is a self-professed agnostic and aims her comedy at everybody and offends everybody, you know how she responded to that guy who did that? She was gracious. And she said, hey, you know, are you okay, basically? Is everything okay? And it's almost as if that guy was disarmed and he came back and he said, you know, actually, and recently I've been struggling with some mental health issues. And she said, you know what, I'll pay for counseling. And in fact, she said, you know what, I'll actually get something that is funded by the people who are on this site. And so the people even who have read your response and who have responded to you that can even be a part of that. And that guy took up that offer and went into counseling to help with his issues. Here's my point in giving you those two stories. Which reaction carries influence? Raging against red cups, responding with graciousness? And in a day like this, could it be that we need to take Jesus' words more seriously than ever? And that he was not just exaggerating for the point of effect, but he was calling us to make some real life decisions in our cultural moment. Here's another choice. Choose grace over tribalism. We know what tribalism, right? That's our group is good and we hang out with each other and you guys are bad and we don't hang out with you at all. And grace crosses some of those lines. And again, in his book, in an age of outrage, we are perpetually encouraged to view others purely in the categories of friend or foe. Are they on my side or against me? Do they like my politics or politicians, endorse my worldview, embrace my ideology? This is a product of the flesh. It is selfish, divisive, wrathful, pretending to be righteous, ouch, but simply driven by our flesh. And again, we might say, well, you know, is there a different way to respond? Here's what Jesus said about that. And I love the way that he comes right down our home street on this one. If you love those who love you, what benefit is that to you? For even sinners love those who love them. You know what Jesus is saying? Everybody does that. That's just more of the same. That's normal. And so let's not view it as anything amazing. And if you do good to those who do good to you, what benefit is that to you? Even sinners do the same. Everybody does that. So what's any different, Jesus? What are you calling us to? Well, if you lend to those from whom you expect to receive, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners to get back the same amount. Everybody is doing that. And then here Jesus goes, but love your enemies. And do good, and lend, expecting nothing in return. And by the way, you see the word love there? In the Greek language in which the New Testament was first written, there are four words for love. We have one that covers everything. They were a little bit more specific. One of them was hardly ever used. One talked about romantic love. One talked about friendship. And the other one talked about a one way kind of love that is the same word that is used for God's love for us. That God loved us even when there was nothing coming back in return. Can you guess which word is used here? It is that same one. And we're called to love. We're called to respond in the same ways that God has treated us. And that's a high bar. And that is not responding in kind. That is responding in a positively different kind of way. And what's waiting for us on the other side of that? Here's what Jesus said. And your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High, for he is kind to the ungrateful and the evil. That's right. He loves those people out there. You know what that implication is? That's us. And really, that's everybody. But it includes us. Be merciful, that even as your Father is merciful. If grace is at the heart of our faith, people need to see grace in us and receive grace from us. That can't just be something that we talk about. It's got to be made real. And I personally believe in this day, what we say is validated or invalidated by what we do. And so are we going to take Jesus' words seriously? And take them not as just, yeah, that's a great, you know, target to shoot at. Will we seek to make them real? One more choice to make is countercultural. Choose forgiveness over judgment. Check out Luke chapter 6, verse 37. Judge not, and you will not be judged. Condemn not, you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. And again, when it says judge not, that doesn't mean that nobody can ever say anything to anybody. When a friend comes to us and is talking about something in our lives, we need to take that seriously. This is talking about writing people off, condemnation, saying there is no hope for them. That's what this is talking about. And boy, does it sound a lot like the reactions of our day. And we need to let that go. This doesn't mean that we don't ever talk about what's evil, what's not right. But the goal here that Jesus is getting after is not condemnation, but redemption. That there would be a transformation for the better. The goal is not the destruction of an enemy, it is to win an enemy and to see them become a friend. Martin Luther King Jr. was somebody who stood on platforms like this, did what I do, but also led a movement, right? And if you know anything about the civil rights movement, you know that there was some outrage, some conflict, some disagreement, and all kinds of different things involved during that very tumultuous time. Well, how would somebody who was on the receiving end of that, because he was like the lightning rod for leading a movement to bring rights to everybody in the same way? In 1957, in Birmingham, Alabama, preaching on the very same passage that we're looking at today, here's a little bit of an excerpt from what Martin Luther King Jr. said. We cannot dismiss this passage as hyperbole, just a sort of exaggeration to get over the point. This is the basic philosophy of our master, agape love. And agape is that Greek word for the God kind of love that loves in one direction when nothing is coming back in the other direction. Agape love has within it a redemptive power. There is a power that eventually transforms individuals. You just keep loving people even though they're mistreating you. Keep loving them because love is redemptive. So this morning, I look into the eyes of all my enemies in Alabama and all over America and all over the world. I say to you, I love you. I would rather die than hate you. And I'm foolish enough to believe that through the power of this love, somewhere men of the most recalcitrant bent, what does that mean? Men of the stiffest resistance will be transformed. And will be in God's kingdom because we had the power to love our enemies, to bless those persons that cursed us, to be good to those who hated us, and we even prayed for those who despitefully used us. That's taking Jesus up on his words, and it's somebody not just speaking from theory, but somebody who lived it. So how do we respond? There's some words that have stuck with me a long time that come from the Old Testament. Have some of these words hanging on my wall, kind of an abbreviated version of this verse. What does the Lord require of you but to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God? But in our day, I wonder if somehow that gets mistranslated into do justice, love outrage, and walk angrily with your God. And that will have an impact, just not an impact that is positively different. And so maybe we need to just ask a very basic question. Is my goal to destroy, or is my goal to redeem my enemies? And what might that look like in real terms in our day? Maybe it looks like this. Just give you one example. Somebody who loves God, believes the Bible, believes that life is God's gift, and believes in the values that God has given to us, who lives next to an agnostic or atheist neighbor who is socialistic and on the board of Planned Parenthood, and saying, why don't you come on over for dinner? Welcome into my life. And let's talk. And if we think, well, that's just selling a whole bunch of stuff short, I think it's taking Jesus up on his words. That there are a number of different ways we can respond in this day, but how will we do it in a way that is positively different and will make an influence for the better? And Jesus points us in a direction that is so different than what is often viewed as a response in kind. And maybe we can ask ourselves this question too. Are the voices that I'm listening to, the ones that I allow to influence me, are they full of condemnation? Are they full of redemption? And boy, it's easy to kind of rally, you know, around somebody and hear, yeah, yeah, yeah. Who am I listening to? And what are they about? And are they influencing me in the directions that Jesus talked about? And so maybe to cast a little bit, you know, of the two columns here of what Jesus talked about on that day. In our culture, there's a lot of anger, tribalism, judgment. Something that swims against the stream of culture in a positively different way, mercy, grace, and forgiveness. And if maybe we had to peg where we are in there, maybe nobody except for Jesus got it perfect ever. But do I lean to one side or the other? And what is it that I can make real as I seek to live out my faith for Jesus in this our cultural moment? So maybe to summarize it all up, you know, in an age of outrage, here we are. This is our day. What are we going to do? How are we going to respond? Jesus calls us, don't respond in kind. Well, what other option is there? Respond in kindness. And here's my prediction, that if we do what Jesus invites us to do, and when somebody comes at us and we don't come back in the same way, and if we get pushed, but if we don't push back, I think it will absolutely freak people out in all the right ways. Well, that's different. And that's the kind of difference that in the 2,000 years of this thing called the church has made a difference for the sake of the honor of God. So this is our day. How will we respond? Would you bow your heads together with me? God, thank you for this beautiful day that we can enjoy outside together. And God, we're even thankful for the day in which we are here in this world. It's not always the easiest day, especially not recently. And God, there are many things that many of us would like to see change and be different than they are. And so God, lead us in the direction that will help us to be a positive influence in that good direction. And God, help us to know that you're not calling us to do anything that you did not do yourself. You had a lot of people come at you, and you would not be provoked. And God, you gave us rules of engagement with each other, with the world that is around us. God, help us to make those real in the way that doesn't even point to us. It points to you, to the God who has been so good to us and given us his love and his grace. And as we know, you loved us way before we ever loved you. So God, may we seek to make that real as we live out our cultural moment. And we ask and pray all of this in Jesus' name. Amen.